I go, right there, Miss Rach. Oh, you're making notes.
I know you're recording already.
You know I am.
You're listening to Pop the Kettle On with Nicole Essio and Dr. Rachel Bushing.
Hi, Rach. How you doing?
Hi, Nick.
We're back, baby.
Welcome back.
Welcome back, everybody. We're very excited. We've been having a little hiatus.
Yes.
And now it's the new year. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
And we're going to go for it. We have a plan. Unlike us. But we're organized.
We are. We're back with a plan, and we have big ideas for this year.
We do. We do indeed.
Yeah. And look, life. Did 2021 even exist?
I don't think so.
No.
No. I figure we went from 2020, when it was complete pandemic craziness, to 2022, which was similar pandemic craziness, but not quite as bad.
I kind of feel like for me, 2020 was the big year, and then 2021 was just the year to recover from the big year.
Yeah. And that makes sense.
I'm just deciding to be gentle on us that we could not podcast because life.
Because life.
But we're back with a plan, and we're organized.
Yeah.
And we have a production team.
We do.
And we have all of the ideas.
Mate, we have so many ideas.
What's happening in your life?
Brimming with ideas.
For the viewers.
For the listeners.
Whatever they are.
Well, there's big news in our household, and that is that there is a wedding planned for Big One, and we're very much excited about that going ahead. Small One has started high school, also very exciting. Big Two back at university very soon, and Small Two going to primary school by himself on his scooter, very confidently about to do his first school camp, which is a big deal. So we'll definitely be working on that sleep situation and hoping that that improves a bit more. Mm-hmm. What about life in your household, Rach?
No news.
That's not true.
No, not really. All very quiet.
Yeah.
Just
going with the flow. Everything's back into routine now that school's back almost.
Yeah. I think, as you know, I'm not a fan of school holidays, so 8 weeks of school holidays is like, no, not a fan.
That was big.
Last year I was slightly hypermanic, walking around going, this and this, I'm going to do this and this and this and this. And I was like floating above myself going like, I think I'm a bit too excited to have school be back. I got to the end of the week and I was like pretty exhausted.
Yeah.
But I have a gift for you, but I forgot it.
Oh, you do?
No.
That's very sweet. Thank you.
So we had our mugs of the year printed for work. And so our pop psychology mug for 2021 says an inspirational quote on the back.
Oh.
So I'll give it to you next time.
Oh, that sounds lovely.
And the inspirational quote that Ben and I workshopped for last year, it is lived, loved, languished.
I love it.
That pretty much sums up the 2021 experience.
Yeah, I think 2021 is just, it was the year of meh. Yeah. And languish is perfect. And Adam Grant did a whole thing about languishing and that people weren't, you know, thriving, but they weren't sort of completely burnt out. They were just meh.
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 Yeah.
So, yeah.
And I think the meh-ness is kind of still here, but
yeah,
thank God that Encanto, you know, has brightened up our lives.
Much like Hamilton brightened up 2020 when it dropped on Disney Plus. Lin-Manuel Miranda has again gifted us with the saving grace of another year.
Yes.
And Encanto, my goodness, that's what we're going to talk about today.
We're all about Encanto.
All about it.
Yes. And I'm just obsessed with Lin-Manuel Miranda.
Yes.
And everything he's ever touched. And I'm very frightened about what will happen in future.
Yeah.
Because you just need to stop. You just need to stop everything being magnificent.
Yeah. I think it's hard to be that magnificent consistently for a long period of time. And he's doing it. So, yeah, you're just kind of waiting for the other shoe to drop, I guess.
Manages to. Have you seen In the Heights?
I have not seen In the Heights. I have not seen Tick, Tick, Boom.
Oh, I have not either. I've seen 5 minutes of it when my husband was watching it.
Yeah.
And I walked in and said, this is definitely a thing that I should be watching. And he said, do you want me to save it for you? And I said, yes. And that was 2 months ago.
Oh. So did he finish watching it without you, you think?
I don't know. I don't think so.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's patience. Mm. I would not have done that.
Yeah. So I did say to Cole that our 10-episode season could basically be all Lin-Manuel Miranda content.
We could basically just do the LMM fan club podcast, yes. I think.
But what I will do instead is I will share on our Facebook page my LMM playlist off Spotify.
Ooh.
Because I'm also just obsessed with playing all of the music all of the time.
Wow.
Yeah. And I have a problem because I don't even know if, like, the projects that he's involved in, if the story's any good, if, like, I don't care about any of it. The music just kind of, like, injects me into my soul.
Yes.
And lights me up.
Yes.
And I'm, like, obsessed.
And I saw a meme the other day that was about, you know, when you are sleeping and you wake up and you do your little stretch and then all of a sudden it's, we got to talk about Bruno.
Like, no.
You just wake up with it in your brain.
You do.
And I wake up with a different song in my brain on the regular. And we watched Vivo on the weekend, also at your recommendation, another one with Lin-Manuel Miranda and Alex Lacamoire music.
Mm-hmm.
And, Marching to the Beat of My Own Drum has been the song that's been earworming for me on that one. Because they do. They just get in there and they stay.
I know. Mm. Was it you who was telling me that Bruno was in, like, the top charts?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Number one on the US Billboard charts. Mm-hmm. Can you believe that?
Yes.
Amazing. But
my husband did say to me,
yeah,
how is that possible that a children's – and I said teenagers was my answer.
Yes, and probably TikToking it all the way.
I imagine very TikTokable.
Exactly.
Do you talky-tick?
I do not talky-tick or ticky-tock. But I get sent TikToks from Big One and Big Two to amuse me, which is fun.
Yes.
Yeah, but I think if I gave myself over to having the app there could be trouble and I might not ever get anything done again.
I feel the exact same way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's nice that they kind of dip in with little things every now and then.
Yeah.
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 But Encanto, synopsis.
Yes.
We have got an amazing Colombian family.
Yes.
Who have escaped war-torn Colombia and gone to somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Not specified.
Now, for the first half of the movie, I was like, this is lame. There's
really?
There's a magic candle. Did hook me in.
Yeah.
But somehow, as they're escaping, they're given a gift.
They are.
Don't know who from. Don't know how, why.
No.
What's going on, but there's a magical candle.
Exactly.
The magical candle makes a magical house,
mm-hmm.
a casita that is alive and a character in the movie.
Exactly.
The three-generation family now live in this amazing casa, the Madrigal, and they have magic powers.
They individually have magic powers that differ from one another. It's not just the same magic power.
Yes.
And, of course, it wouldn't be, you know, a Disney-ish movie if there wasn't a death at the start. So the reason they get the candle is because the patriarch is killed while everybody's fleeing. Classic Disney. Why do parents have to die all the time in these movies?
It's got to be done.
It's tragic. and so that's how they get the candle somehow magically after the patriarch of the family dies.
Mm-hmm.
And the abuela is now responsible for the candle and making sure the magic lives on.
Yes, and some magical, like, mountains grow around and their little village, which is called the Encanto.
Yeah.
Somehow grows. Don't know how people get there. But anyway,
it's magic.
Plot holes doesn't matter.
We don't want to pick apart plot holes.
No.
We're going to talk about the things that
there's
actually...
There's a magic candle. There's a magical village full of people, children who drink coffee and don't know what the madrigals do, even though they've lived their whole life with the madrigals.
Yes.
So that whole conceit of setting up that first introducing of the family, I don't buy it, but it's okay. Because Lynn wrote the song and it's stuck in my head and I don't care.
Exactly.
It's a party.
Yeah. You love it. It's, you can't help yourself. So, all of the madrigals who are descendant from the madrigal actual, you know, bloodline, get magical powers when they turn of age.
Mm-hmm.
And they do that by getting their own door, a magical door that they turn the handle of, and that becomes a new room in the casita that they can then that's their room, and that shows them their magical powers.
Yeah.
And of course, when it is Mirabelle's turn to go to the magical door, her door disappears. She gets no powers. And there's big concern about what that means for the magic. So, yeah, that's the setup of the whole thing, basically.
Yes.
Mm.
So, I told you, preparing for this, there are so many themes.
Oh, so much going on in this film.
How to pick one.
Yeah. I think for me what resonated the most was the immigrant story theme, the first generation kid, the pressure of what that means to be, you know, someone has sacrificed a lot in order to give you the opportunities to be in this new land. And that's kind of the Madrigal story is that they moved from Colombia and they went to this magical land where they had all these opportunities. And so there was a lot of pressure on that first generation of kids to do it right and to really make good on the sacrifice that the parents made.
Yeah.
So yes, as a first generation kid myself, I understand that.
Did you feel that?
Not intensely. I think there's a generational kind of baggage that you get when you know, you're born into a family, whether it's an immigrant family or one that's been, you know, 27 generations in the same place. You do have that generational baggage. So I think that certainly the immigrant work ethic was something that was really ingrained, and that anything you wanted to do, you had to work your tail off for, and, and that was an end into itself, and that was that gave you value. If you worked hard, that meant you were really valuable as a human.
What do you know of your family's experience of the old world? And what brought them to the new world?
Well, both both sides, so the Scottish and the Italian sides, it was post-war. So completely devastated by World War II, both in Scotland, near the River Clyde in Dumbarton in Scotland, where my mum was born, where my grandfather was, you know, a shipbuilder. And so, you know, during the war, obviously had a lot of work, a heap of work. And then it all just disappeared. He ended up running a bar and then decided that he wanted to make his way with his daughters to the new world and said to my gran, I'm taking the girls to Australia. Either you come with us or see you later. Apparently there was quite the ultimatum. And so, yeah, they made their way to Victoria. And then on the Italian side, same deal. You know, my grandfather fought in the war when Italy changed sides. So from 41. And, you know, the house, my nonna has said, the house that they lived in was, you know, a dirt floor and they were really scraping by. I don't know the impetus for Australia specifically, though. And I really, my nonna is now, well, she's 95 this year, and, you know, English is her second language. So getting to the bottom of why Australia, I think, would be fantastic. But, yeah, it's really interesting.
It is interesting.
And brave. It's such a courageous thing to do, to leave everything you know. I mean, this is pre-internet times. You didn't know what the heck you were going to. So, yeah, and same with, you know, with Paul. You know, in 1982, they didn't know what Australia was. No internet then. I just think it's a really courageous move. So, yeah.
I see. Ask me about my immigration
story.
Tell
me your immigration story.
I know nothing.
You know nothing about the Wagners. Wow.
Or the Book Kings.
So when did your family come?
So this is one of the key themes for me, is the family secrecy. We don't talk about Bruno.
Interesting.
Because in the Madrigals, you know, there's such pressure to be perfect. And the abuela, the grandmother, my daughter really wants to learn Spanish too, by the way.
Amazing.
Listening to all these Spanish songs, because Vivo has a bit of Spanish in it as well. And in the Heights, there's an abuela. And she's like, why is there abuela in both of them? And I'm like, it means grandmother, darling. So the abuela of the Madrigal family is just so like straight backed, so composed, so sort of like serene looking. It's almost like she's like floating through each scene. And, you know, as it goes on, really talks about that pressure to be perfect and to aspire everybody in the family that they need to kind of maintain this. We were given a gift. And so now we owe the gift. Again, where did it come from? God knows. The whole town is counting on us to service the town, and we can't crack. There's
no way, room for error.
No room for error. And so then, of course, you know, Mirabel is doesn't get a gift and apparently doesn't have a place. And she's a bit clumsy and she kind of trips up and messes things up. And so she has a really lovely arc, which we'll get to. But family secrets So I don't know. But what I do know as a psychologist is that when there's trauma, one of the ways of coping with trauma most commonly is to lock down on the passing down of any information whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
I do know that I'm white Australian and that on both sides of my family probably goes back at least. Look, I know my parents, my grandparents and their parents.
Mm.
So my great grandparents on both sides were Australian.
Wow.
I have a German name, as you said, Wagner is my maiden name. I do have a document that says that the Wagners on my dad's side came over in the, I think it was the 1860s.
Yeah,
I'm going to take a stab there. And so there is this kind of document that says that the Wagners had something like 16 children.
Wow.
And like four of which survived to adulthood kind of story.
Yikes, yeah, common.
And that, yeah, and that there was, you know, just a lot of poverty and starvation and stuff like that. And that's when they came over. But I don't know what happened between that 1860-ish and when I was born in 1980.
Wow.
So it kind of – there's a mapping of a family tree that someone did at some point, but that's it.
I find there's always one in the family who's interested in that stuff.
I'm fascinated. When we lived in England, I was like, must know it all. And, you know, half-heartedly looked into it.
Yeah.
Maybe, you know, when I retire, that's what happens.
Yeah.
I would love to do the, what's that show with the, where did you come from?
Yeah. Yeah.
I'd love. I'll just get famous enough to be on that show and then they can do all of that for me. That's the dream.
Yeah.
And then I married a man with a German name because Bushing is not a real name and I'm the only, like, we're the only Bushing family in Australia because it's a fake name.
Wow.
Because the original spelling was B-U-C-H-I-N-G.
Gotcha.
Not being German, not having any links there, I actually don't know if it's pronounced Bushing or Buching.
Mm-hmm.
Although some German friends have said most commonly the CH is a hard.
Yeah.
And that's probably somewhere in the 20th century where Germany was not very popular in the world, somebody decided let's anglicise this name and make it Bushing.
Mm-hmm.
That's all I know.
Yeah, wow.
So I carry with me the burden of intergenerational trauma unknown.
Yes.
Mm.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, I guess... Mirabelle's challenge in this Madrigal family is that she is, you know, the next generation and she's missed out on her gift and, and you know, her two older sisters have gifts and her cousins have gifts and she is without.
Correct. Mm. So I'm going to point out to you,
please,
a phenomenon of family systems theory and it is about scapegoating.
Gotcha.
Which, you know what scapegoating is.
Mm.
A person needs to be the problematic one.
Mm-hmm.
So in the family systems context, a family that is, well, all families have dysfunction. I was going to say a family that's not functioning well, which is all families.
All families.
But especially these unknown, unresolved traumas creating these rifts between families.
Mm.
In the space of what remains unsaid because it's too difficult to name or to talk about, we give someone in the family, we kind of elect as being the bearer of the problems, the problematic one.
Yeah, the black sheep that we can dump on.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
And it's kind of interesting because in a sense, like, that was Bruno.
Yeah.
But then it sort of becomes Mirabelle.
Yeah.
Bruno leaves because... his gift of seeing the future was causing such distress for the family because it was not perfect.
Yeah.
It was a bit weird.
Mm-hmm.
At one point, Mirabelle says to him, us family weirdos have got to stick together.
I love that. You've got to find your weirdos and hang together. I think that's important.
I know. And I love how weird he is.
Yeah.
He's brilliant.
Oh, and just can we just sidetrack for a second?
Yes.
About him setting himself a place at a table next to the wall where his family's table is set. It just,
I know.
You know, stabs you right in the heart, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Wants to be a part of it, but keeps himself away to try and protect them.
Mm-hmm. Mm. So they all think he's run off, but he's actually just living in the walls and sitting down to dinner with them every night.
Every night.
I was also obsessed with, like, who voices this character? Mm. Do you know who voices it?
John Leguizamo.
Oh, my God. Talk about people I'm obsessed with.
Yeah.
Ever since Moulin Rouge.
Right.
And then I'm just kind of like, put those two things together. Because, you know, first watch, I'm like, he's got a great voice.
Yeah. But also there's a familiarity about that voice.
I know, right?
You have to try and pick it, and it's driving
and
you crazy.
Like, yeah. I'm obsessed.
Yeah.
Tim Bruno.
Yes, Tim Bruno all the way. Mm-hmm. And just, it's amazing how he bears the brunt of that scapegoating. You know, mm-hmm. he really does kind of hold it and tries to keep it just to himself,
yeah.
so that he doesn't mm-hmm. spew out anywhere else. He just really wants to hang on to it for the family, that mm-hmm. real sense of obligation and familial love mm-hmm. that he just wants to make sure that it doesn't spill out of him, because he feels like he's...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because his gift is truth-telling.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's incompatible with Abuela's goals.
Of perfection seeming.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I love it. He's just like, your fish is going to die and you're going to go bald and grow a gut.
I mean, fish dying and bald and growing a gut, I think are fairly standard things that happen
that
to people.
To people. Yeah, I saw some commentary as well that it was, there's all these little totems there that's about aging.
Yeah.
Because there's like the sand with the hourglass in his tower and that, even his predictions are all kind, to do with like death or, you know, mortality or,
yeah.
So saying someone's going to go bald is aging related.
Yeah, absolutely.
And, you know, this is what befalls all of us.
But also I think, you know, just predicting the future means you are talking about the passage of time. So mm-hmm. it's unavoidable.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's interesting that he is one of the original three siblings. Mm. Mirabelle's mum obviously can make food that will heal people.
Yes.
Extraordinary gift.
Let's just backtrack.
Please.
Because I don't know how that woman was holding three babies.
Yes. So,
as a mother of multiples, mm-hmm. I'm like, I'm not buying it.
Three babies and the magical candle. So Abuela and the patriarch, his name I always forget.
It's Abuelo.
Yes, Abuelo, but yeah. He wouldn't have...
I don't think they say it.
I feel like they do, but
I
can't remember.
Okay.
So yeah, Abuela and her husband have three babies. They have mm-hmm. triplets. Mm-hmm. And so they're escaping Colombia with these triplets, and that's when he gets killed. She gets the candle. She's raising these three on her own. Mm-hmm. All three of them get magic gifts.
Yes.
One of them being Bruno, one of them being Mirabelle's mum, mm-hmm. Julieta, mm-hmm. and the other one who can...
Peppa,
who can... the weather.
Clear skies.
So yeah, it's, and then obviously their kids mm-hmm. get gifts, except for Mirabelle.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Do your children do this thing where they have to choose a character in a movie?
No.
Because mine do constantly.
Oh, that best reflects them or that they are attracted to?
Both, I think. Yeah. They, oh my God, at the moment the big kids are watching The Simpsons.
Right.
Three children.
Yes.
So I'm kind of like, that's our Halloween costume for this year.
Oh my gosh, yes. Mm-hmm. I can see the blue hair on you now.
But they do it in every show.
Mm.
And actually... Yeah, so my little guy, who's now six, he's obsessed with Antonio.
Yes.
Who is the guy who can talk to the animals and has the coolest room.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
My 10-year-old daughter, she really wants to be Dolores. Mm-hmm. So this is one of the cousins, Mirabelle's cousin.
Yeah.
And she is, I think she likes that she's pretty, but also that she's very composed.
Yes.
But also that she's a gossip.
Yes.
Because not only does she hear everything, mm-hmm. she also tells everybody everything.
Uh-huh. She does not keep that stuff to herself.
And for some reason, my daughter is just like, I love Dolores.
Yeah.
She's amazing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
And of course, my 10-year-old son wants to be the shapeshifter, mischief maker.
Yes. Yeah, that's... Same with my 9-year-old. Mm-hmm. Yeah, small twos, like, oh, that's fantastic. Mm-hmm. How amazing would that be?
And who are we missing? Luisa.
Luisa.
Who is the strong one,
mm-hmm.
which I think is an amazing role model for many young girls, I suppose, to be the strong one. But again, of course, her beautiful character arc is like, under pressure.
Yeah.
I'm holding it all together.
Yeah. And figuring out that being the strong one doesn't mean you have to be the strong one all the time,
mm-hmm.
that you actually can fall and people will catch you.
Mm-hmm.
And interestingly, apparently the Luisa merge, mm-hmm. they were trying to Disney-fy Luisa and make her look less physically strong, because mm-hmm. she is a very physically strong looking character.
Mm-hmm.
Very broad shoulders, very, you know, big muscles, because obviously she can move mountains and carry churches around and all that mm-hmm. sort of stuff. And so they had originally wanted to make her look more Disney than what her character was deemed appropriate. And apparently the sales of Louisa merch is on par with every other character or even more. They love her.
Mm.
They love her.
Yeah.
Because she's a very attractive character.
Yes. I have very unkind, skeptical things floating around in my brain about capitalism.
Yeah. Fair enough. Fair
marketers.
Enough. Marketers and capitalism.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I think that dynamic between the sisters is really interesting, the three sisters.
Oh, yes. So, of course, Isabella.
Isabella is the perfect.
The absolute perfect one.
Who grows flowers and
yes,
plants.
Yes, yes. There's not really a family systems word for the non-scapegoat.
Oh, not the golden child? There isn't a golden child?
There you go. Mm. It's in our parlance, right? Yeah. And, I mean, we understand this, like, scapegoat kind of idea. It's the black sheep, you know. There's got to be one in every family.
Mm-hmm.
And the family systems theory is that it's the dynamics of the system that create the one who least fits,
gotcha,
becomes more and more sidelined,
yeah,
as the family are not grappling with the genuine issues in front of them, but instead going, no, I still get to be perfect, and they other a member of the family.
So as to separate.
Correct. So, yeah, of course, it's kind of really convenient to sort of pinpoint the golden child as being like, this is the epitome of everything that this, yeah, family stands for. And I love the way that, I mean, it's lovely at the start, the way, like, Mirabella's just like, oh, Isabella, she's so perfect all the time. And then, of course, Isabella gives voice to that experience too, that the burden of being the one who's expected to carry the perfection,
yeah,
for everybody.
Including even marrying someone she doesn't love, yeah, in order to maintain the magic. Mm-hmm. You know, she was prepared to do that for her family.
Mm-hmm. And so, like, the biggest rift, like, you know, that we see at the start is between Mirabelle and Isabella.
Mm.
But, you know, that's just the two polar ends of the family.
Yeah.
Everybody else manages to exist in this nice middle ground because those two are sidelined.
Yeah, yeah, it's fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
And all the while, brilliant colour and life and animation and songs, and, you know, they just, they get you with the songs.
They do.
They do.
So, instead of rabbit on for another hour or
which
so,
we absolutely could do.
We are doing an amazing job. First episode back. And just want to bring it full circle, because what happens with Mirabelle in the end is that she does get her door. And it makes me cry every single time.
Yeah.
Well, first of all, everything breaks.
Yeah.
I love the way that the cracks in the wall are like, you know, this whole kind of idea of like, what is our scapegoat doing to break apart this family?
Mm.
But it had to be shattered in order to actually get to the truth of the matter.
Yeah.
And she travels with Abuela and understands Abuela's history and her origin story in a new way. And Abuela turns and says, you know, you're an important part of this family.
Yeah. If you look to the menu board right now,
oh,
the miracle is you, not some gift, just you.
How beautiful is it?
Mm-hmm.
And I cry every time. My kids tease me so much because even when I listen to the song,
yeah,
when so little Antonio so Bruno hands her the doorknob.
Yeah.
Anyway, so it all falls apart and then they have to rebuild, and the village come and help them and they rebuild it from the ground up
from
with
a more
new
solid
set of
foundation.
Rules. That's exactly right. And then they say, well, we had it all wrong because, you know, Mirabelle was not meant to be one of the doors into a bedroom. She's meant to be the front door.
Mm-hmm.
So
she's the glue.
Bruno says, we need a doorknob. And little Antonio goes, we made this one for you.
Yeah. Just as you decided to whisper that, as Antonio does, the jackhammer starts.
So you may not have heard it.
Yeah.
We made this one for you. And it just gets me.
Yeah,
it just gets me every time.
I know. It's so exquisite
mm-hmm.
in its appreciation for those people in the family who hold things together.
Yeah.
Who tell the truths mm-hmm. that need to be told, because cracking it open or lancing boils mm-hmm. is how you, you know,
air it. And then it can heal.
Yeah,
that's
exactly.
Right.
Yeah,
and can't. She's not broken.
No.
She's the most whole one of all because she's the glue and she holds them all together.
Exactly.
And again, I saw some commentary that was like, it's like the passing of the torch too, that Abuela is not going to be around for so much longer
mm-hmm.
and that there needs to be more than just a candle that yeah. holds this family together. And
yeah.
that's kind of one of Mirabelle's key traits,
yeah,
is that she just loves everyone.
Yeah.
So and much.
sees their gifts, but also how those gifts mm-hmm. affect them.
Yep.
In a real human mm-hmm. way. Mm-hmm. And so she understands them at a level that others don't necessarily.
That's exactly right. She unlocks the truer part of themselves.
Yeah.
What a gift.
What a gift. And so are you, dear listeners, because we appreciate your patience with us and that you are hanging in there waiting for the next Pop the Kettle On. We love that about you guys.
Mm-hmm.
But if no one's told you today, you are enough. Just as you are.
Yeah.
You are enough.
All of you.
All of you. Mm-hmm. So, Rach.
Yes.
That's Encanto.
Yes.
In a very small nutshell.
Correct.
We could go on, but mm-hmm. we won't because we're going to behave ourselves and keep to time.
We are going to mm-hmm. commit to releasing our blog again mm-hmm. each episode.
Correct.
Haven't decided who's going to do it just yet.
I thought that was me this time.
Fab.
We made. Because I started making notes.
Yay. Good job. Good job. So, see that from Nick. We are going to hopefully do every fortnight drop, see how it goes.
Mm-hmm.
Well, 2022 is not all healed.
That's correct.
We will see how we go.
Yeah.
Next time, I'm very excited that we're going to be talking about...
Dun, dun, dun.
Grace Tame.
Grace Tame.
Brittany Higgins.
And Brittany Higgins. It's going to be huge, so you don't want to miss it. So come back here next fortnight,
mm-hmm.
And listen again to the next episode of Pop the Kettle On. Don't forget to rate and review on whichever podcast platform you listen to. And also, you know, share on Facebook. When we pop things on, you can pop them along to your friends as well.
Yes.
And let people know where to find us.
Yeah.
So find us on Facebook at Pop the Kettle On podcast. You'll find Little Shop of Pop on Facebook as well. We're on Twitter at pop_kettle. And don't forget to share us with your friends. And we will see you next time. But in the meantime, Rach,
hug your babies.
And be kind to yourselves and one another. And we'll talk to you in a couple of weeks.
Yay!
Bye.
Bye.
You've been listening to a Little Shop of Pop production. Pop the Kettle On is hosted by Wooshka and is edited and produced by me, Nicole Lissio, and Dr. Rachel Bushing, with production help from the fabulous Palak. Talk to you next time.